Hey everybody, this is Albert Escobedo, your host for the Pet Peeves podcast. Just asking if you like my podcast, if you're enjoying the content and what you're listening to, become a sponsor. Find the link on the Anchor, the sponsor link on my Anchor website and or on the SoundCloud website. Wherever you find the descriptions for these episodes, you can find the link to become a sponsor. For $1 a month, $5 a month, $10 a month, help the podcast grow. Thank you guys very much. Thank you for listening. Bye. Hey everybody, what's up? Welcome back to the Pet Peeves Podcast, episode number 36. This is another special episode because I have somebody from my Stand-Up Soul days, one of the original members and administrators of the Stand-Up Soul group. Please welcome to the show, Jeff Sinclair. How's it going, Jeff?
I'm just fine.
Hey, it's awesome for you to be here, man. I really, really appreciate anybody who's on the podcast, especially comedians that, you know, I came up with. So how's the COVID-19? I like to ask all my comedian friends, how's it affecting you?
Well, I've always been a very solitary creature, so not affecting me as hard as some other people, but it's really slowed down my city, which is a small city to begin with, so it's just...
What about the comedy?
The comedy scene here is non-existent right now because of the COVID. There was just one live comedy show last Friday from the comedy club.
And they did it, what, like without an audience?
They did it without an audience, and they had, I guess, 7 different performers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Did it turn out well? I mean, some of the ones that are going on right now, I think people have good things to say about.
I myself didn't watch it. So I just read the recaps on Facebook, but it seems like a lot of people are watching. So.
Yeah, I think that's important for them to try things. But from my perspective and what people have told me, performing on an online show is not a lot of fun.
Yeah, I imagine. I mean, because part of the reward, right, is the payback of the laughter and...
Yeah, I actually tried to do an Instagram live open mic a day or two ago, and 3 different attempts, and it froze on me, and I just stopped trying. But they were nice enough, the people in the group were nice enough to let me try 3 different times. But whatever, it didn't work out, and I hope that they don't hate me.
Actually, one of the most fun I had recently was a friend of mine in Korea set up their fish tank live, and... So a whole bunch of people, I guess, from my past that live in Korea, we all kind of watched this and just commented on it. And it was pretty fun to just joke around with it.
While on the fish tank?
Yeah, while he was setting up his fish tank. He spent literally 45 minutes just trying to decide how the rocks should go inside the fish tank. And so we all commented on stuff like that and like disagreed. And it was
right, so there are ways to make this online experience funny. Like I've had a lot of really funny exchanges on here with comedians. And even in the podcast, which tends to be less fun to do over the computer like this than if you were over at my house and we were having a couple beers and chatting over the microphones, that's a lot more fun. But it has had its moments. So it's like, well, you know, maybe this will just adapt a new way of people performing comedy. Like this is just maybe... The infant stage, the larval stage of something awesome.
Yeah, I think there'll always be a place for the live performance, but I think there is definitely going to be a mutated offshoot of this, and it's interesting to see where it's going to go, especially what kind of new art forms it's going to create.
Right. Yeah, I think like you were talking to me about, like you're putting on trivia shows virtually now, right?
Well, we just did some test drives with having a few different teams, and now that I've got it all figured out, it looks like it's going to almost be as dynamic as the real thing. The hardest concern was like platforms like Zoom and other ones, you can't have a private team room where they're chatting while watching the live action.
Mm.
But I figured out a way to bypass that and have it so teams can talk together, but while watching the presentation and watching me present the trivia. And now that I got that going, I can't wait to get started.
Yeah, man, that sounds really awesome. Very innovative. I was just playing something last night called House Party. Have you heard of this?
Yeah,
so it's similar to that, right, where we were doing trivia and stuff, and it was a really good time. But I'm like, oh, this is like a baby platform. Like there's way more interesting and fun ways that this could be done. It reminded me of like when you're at a restaurant and they have like a trivia game there, but it's like for kids. So I'm like, oh, they could spice this up, make it for adults, put a little Words Against Humanity spin on it, and it could be a really good time for us bored adults.
Yeah, well, I've contacted Zoom so many times, like to the point where I know the names of some of the people working there.
Really?
And yeah, telling them this is what you need to do to make it more exciting, A, for classroom dynamics, but then also for people to be able to put on better shows. Because there's certain key things that they're missing. And every time they're always like, yeah, thanks for the comments. Actually, we're really trying to work on that stuff to keep building. And like, but and yeah, I literally know some of the people by name now.
No, it's awesome. I love the, when I've talked to, like I was telling you before, my school is trying to purchase a learning management system and go 100% online. So I've been talking to not Zoom, but a lot of online companies with people that have been doing it for a long time, and I'm brand spanking new at it. I've been doing it since COVID-19 hit March 15th or whatever. And these people, you know, they're very much on, they're very honest with me about that. They're building out their platforms, that all these requests that people have, like me, an educator that wants to honestly, with the, you know, bottom of my heart, be the best teacher I could be so my students can have the best learning experience. And I'm not good online, I'm good in person, so I need you to help me, electronics, you know, technology. So the people there always tell me, oh no, we're adding that to our platform, we're building that out, our engineers are working on that right now. And I believe them. So that's why I think in like less than a year, it's going to be really different. It's going to be very different. We're all going to be more comfortable. People are going to already have like their own way of doing it, you know, little hacks and cheats. And like you said, like you can create something that didn't exist yesterday.
Yeah. And then hopefully too, there'll be, you know, pick up some corporate sponsors. So like be the official Zoom trivia night. You know,
heck yeah. That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. Like me with my podcast, you know, I'm not new to the podcast game. I didn't get into the game early, but as far as COVID-19 podcasts go, now, pre COVID-19 and post COVID-19, there's gonna be a lot more podcasts. You know what I mean?
Especially a lot more video oriented ones too.
Well, yep, exactly. And so I'm like, okay, so now there's this cutoff mark that I made. And now what innovative things can I do with my podcast? And this is one of them. Like originally people told me that you can't interview people distance, right? Like somebody's in a different country or a different city, that it won't work. But I've been doing it for months now and it works.
Yeah. It always reminds me of, I remember talking to Ben Kronberg and he said, if you're not first to platform, if you're not first to like this new thing, then just don't even bother a year later. And as soon as COVID happened and I saw people putting all of this new content on the net to entertain other people, like, you know, just people reading bedtime stories or people doing all this, it was like, okay, this is another chance to actually like be first to platform, even though it's old, you know, technically old technology and, you know, stuff people have done before. It's just now it's being done in such larger amounts because there's such a larger audience eating it up.
It's amazing. It's amazing. I put a video on TikTok. I'm nobody hated TikTok more than me. Before I put a video on there. And I didn't even know what it was. I just knew that kids liked it and it was stupid. That's all I knew. And then I put a video on there and it got 6,000 views in a day. And I'm like, oh, TikTok's not so bad. And and then you learn 6,000 views on TikTok is nothing. And then you're like, but it's not nothing. I've been doing comedy for a long time. 6,000 views is not nothing. I don't care what you say. So it's like, wow, it's new. It's new. It feels different.
Is that a cage next to you?
It's a crate for the dog. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I have my bearded dragon right here to my left.
Okay, so you've got a bearded dragon, you've got a dog. What else do you got?
A cat and a betta fish.
All right, you're slowly collecting the little menagerie of animals there.
You know it, man. I'm like going all in. I'm really leaning into the animal thing, and it's in my nature, man. I wanted to be a veterinarian way before I wanted to be a comedian. Yeah. So it's like now that it's sort of pushing me in that direction as much as I try to fight it, it's almost like, oh shit, I should have just been doing this the whole time.
Yeah, you got to follow your heart.
Yeah, no doubt. I was listening to the Joe Rogan podcast, which is a statement that gets said in my podcast all the time. And they were talking about like, what did you want to do when you were a kid? What did you want to do when you were a kid? And I was like, man, I wanted to be a veterinarian since as long as I can remember until the first time I did stand-up. The first time I did stand-up just changed everything, changed my whole life.
Yeah, I used to want to be a garbage man.
Me too. That's so cool. Me too.
For years.
I did too. Do you remember that show Rock?
Just called Rock?
It was called Rock, R-O-C.
No.
It was about a garbage man, and I wanted to be a garbage man, and then I saw that show, and he was a garbage man, and he had like a really nice house and a nice car, and I was like, oh man, garbage man would be a great job. Just hang out on the back of a truck all day, and nobody tells you what to do, and you just pick up garbage cans, easiest job, make good money.
Well, I saw the movie Men at Work with Emilio Estevez and Charlie Sheen.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that one too.
that made me want to be a garbage man for a long time.
It's a good city job. What happened to that dream?
It got lost. You know, it turned to moving. Turned to moving for a while.
That was your new job, moving?
Yeah, furniture business. I was obsessed. I loved working as a furniture mover.
Oh, wow.
It was the greatest job. It was like paid exercise.
That's true.
And yeah, and you're in a different place every single day, and you learn a lot about people by being around their stuff.
Well, I bet.
Yeah. Especially rich people. Jesus, like, you think they got their stuff together, but then, like, you're packing up some certain things, and you're like, oh, my God, look at this porn collection. These objects, where do they even go?
This is what you did, what, right after college, before Korea?
Oh, I started it when I was 14. I did it until 24.
So oh, wow.
10 years.
Jeez, like a family business, or you just got a job and kept it?
It was much better than working at McDonald's. My brother was working there before me when he was in high school, and then he got me a job when I was 14, because I was, you know, I was 6 foot six and a half at 14.
Holy crap.
And I was, you know, fit. And so it was, yeah, it paid like twice the amount that minimum wage did. Plus you got tips a lot of the time, and you're outside all summer. So it seemed perfect.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. You did it that long?
Driving the trucks, and it was such a good job. You didn't have to think whatsoever. So you had the whole day, you know, I was writing jokes in my head, or I was writing letter ideas, or I was coming up with all these different things.
Yeah, man, that's I'm so glad you mentioned it, because one of the top reasons that I remember your comedy is because you had the letters at large. Like, that's what I remember, because there's like I know Jeff during the time I was working with Jeff, and then since then, you know, post knowing Jeff. So in the beginning part, Jeff had this letters at large bit that he would do at the comedy shows. And it was like really hilarious and so original. And then he tells me that he had been doing it in Canada, which just made me realize, like, you know, I thought everybody in Korea had just started doing comedy. That's what I thought. But no. There were some guys like Jeff that had been doing comedy. And what was your letters at large? What was the whole idea behind it?
I sent real letters to businesses with made up stories involving their company. In sort of some sort of positive light, because I didn't write complaint letters or anything like that. But yeah, it was all positive stories, but really weird, bizarre positive stories about their product. And they, of course, believed the letter, and they wrote back. And some of the stuff they wrote back was hard for me to believe. And it was funnier than what I wrote. And it was initially just a hobby to do because I was wanting to be a creative writer major in the university for a while, and it was a really good writing exercise that I was just doing as a hobby. And then one day, because I was doing improv at the time, one of my friends from Toronto, this girl Becky, suggested, hey, you should start doing this on stage. And I realized, oh, I guess I could do this on stage. And then it became a show.
And it was so funny, man. It was so funny. Do you still do it?
I just did it in, I went to, I was in Asia in February.
Oh, wow.
And just prior to going to Asia, I had the big Saturday night was I did the letter show, which was sold out, and then got on a plane Tuesday and went to Asia.
Wow.
And I was supposed to do it in Hong Kong. I had this new club called The Riff. I had like the contracts already and set to do a headlining show of it. And then, of course, you know, my flight got canceled because of COVID, and I had to rearrange my trip.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to ask. So it was right before, like, they warned you guys, right? They warned travelers?
There were a total of, initially we were supposed to fly to Shanghai, but then everything to mainland China was closed down. And then Hong Kong only had 15 cases at the time, and we were still going to go. But then they canceled flights to Hong Kong, and then we had to switch to South Korea. And South Korea at the time only had 20 cases. So we felt safe enough going there. And literally the day we landed in South Korea, we got off the plane, we met my friends for dinner, one of them being Daniel Kennedy.
Oh, wow.
And he was like, did you hear? There's a huge outbreak in Daegu right now, 500 people overnight because of that church. And we were flying out the next day to go to the Philippines. I was with a buddy, traveling with a comedian friend. And we were supposed to come back, though, to Seoul and do a bunch of shows in Seoul and, you know, Pyeongtaek and some of the other places. But we had to cancel all that because the outbreak was just massive.
Wow, man. That's incredible. That's an incredible story. I'm glad I asked you. I didn't realize that you were in Asia, you know, a month ago, basically a month and a half ago.
Yeah, and then we went to Japan and in Osaka. And from Osaka, my buddy decided to fly home to Canada. I decided to go see my parents in Hawaii. And so here's a story that has not been told and recorded yet. I get on – I'm in Hawaii for one day, and then I'm supposed to go to fly to Phoenix to see my parents. And the day of the flight, I get on my flight. We're ready to take off from Hawaii to Phoenix. And I cough three times, literally just three times, dry cough, because, you know, airplane air is so dry. And the guy behind me gets up and goes, "This guy's fucking sick. We got to get him off the plane." And I turned, I was like, "No, dude, like, I have asthma and it's dry in here. I just coughed briefly." And he's like, "Look at you, you're sweating." And I was like, "Yeah, because I'm fat, number one. And two, I'm wearing a sweater in Hawaii right now. God. Like, I'm sweating, yeah." And he calls the flight attendant over and he goes, "We got to get this guy off the plane. He's sick." What? Right? And they're like, "Sir, are you sick?" I go, "No." And they're like, "Look at his eyes. He's bloodshot." I go, "I was drinking last night. I'm hungover. I'm sweating because I'm overweight. And I cough three times because of the air." And then she asks me, "Well, what's your flight history?" And I go, "Oh, fuck. I was in South Korea and I was in Japan." And that was enough for her. Like, the guy screams out, "He's got," and it wasn't called COVID then, it was still just Corona. "So he's got the coronavirus. We got to get this guy off." And they pull me to the front of the plane and I talk with these flight attendants. And they're like, "Have you been sick?" I'm like, "No." And they're like, "Well, why are you sweating so much?" I go, "Jesus, because I'm fat." Right? And they're like, "Have you been coughing?" I go, "I coughed three times and that guy fucking freaked out. And now we're in this whole mess," right? And they're like, "Well, would you be willing to move to another seat?" I go, "Sure, but I don't think he's going to let me move to another seat. Mm-hmm. Go talk to him." They come back and they said, "The guy wants us to take you off the plane." And I said, "Okay, is he the captain? Like, why are we even listening to this guy?
Who's this guy?
Go talk to the captain." They come back and it's been explained to me, "We don't think you're sick. We think you're fine. But this guy has started this big scene and now multiple passengers are unsettled. So we're going to have to ask you to leave the plane." They had to return to the gate. They announced that there was a situation, we were returning to the gate, but don't worry, folks, we'll be up and running in no time. And it was explained to me, once you get off, they'll take you to the Hawaiian Air desks, and they'll set you up on the next flight, and they'll put you on the next flight to Phoenix. And I was like, "All right, well, this is not your fault. This is strange times. That guy's being a huge fucking asshole, but, you know, what can you do about it, right? This is the only way I can see it being solved. I get it. I'm not angry. Just as long as I'm on that next flight, fine." Mm. So I get up. They open the door. They've got a whole medical staff there to greet me.
What?
They've got this little, like, 60-year-old Hawaiian woman with a wheelchair. And they're like, "Get in the wheelchair." I go, "I'm fine. Like, I can walk." And they're like, "No, protocol says you got to get in the wheelchair." And so I'm like, "She can't, like, look at how..."
You're like twice her size.
Yeah, she can't push me. Right? And they're like, "Please just sit in the wheelchair." And I sit in the wheelchair. She can't push me. Right? So they're like, "Would you mind getting up and walking?" I'm like, I told you I would walk. Like, what is this?
Wow.
And then we get taken out to the area. They check my pulse. They check my temperature. Everything's normal. "Why are you sweating?" "Oh, Christ, because I'm fat. How many times do I have to say this?" And then they go, "Okay, well, we believe you're not sick. But what you got to do is you got to go to the local hospital. You got to go through tests with them. And you have to get a letter that says you're fit to fly."
What?
And I'm in Hawaii. I'm in a strange place. I don't know where to go, what to do. And this guy drops me off at the cab stand. And he goes, "Okay, just tell them you need to go to the closest hospital." So I go there. I sit down. The nurse is just like, "You know, what's happened?" I explain it to her. She goes, "What? Sounds like you're not even sick. Sounds like the guy's just being an asshole." I go, "Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I've been saying." So they check me over. They check me for two types of flu. They check all my vitals. They do an x-ray. And of course, you know, I'm in America. I have travel insurance. Hopefully it's going to cover this. And finally, they come and they talk to me and they say, you're totally healthy. You're totally clear. There's nothing wrong. There's a little bit of congestion, but that's nothing to worry about. Hawaii doesn't actually have the corona test, so we couldn't even test you if we wanted to. So I said, great. And they go, so there's some good news and bad news. And I said, well, what is it? And they go, well, the good news is, we can let you go. We think you're totally fine. We called the CDC. They say you don't meet the criteria for the corona test. So I go, great. Can I get that piece of paper? And they go, well, that's the bad news. The CDC says to us, well, we can't actually say he doesn't have the coronavirus because you haven't done the test on him, because you don't have the corona test in Hawaii. So you can't actually say he's fit to fly because we don't know that he doesn't have the coronavirus.
Wow.
So then they tell me, we can't give you the paper. And I go, "What? Well, what am I going to do? I'm on an island in the middle of the Pacific here. Like, how do I get home?" And the nurse leans over. She's like, "Well, I would just get another airline if I were you." And I was like, "Yeah, but how do I know they haven't flagged me?" And then she goes, "Well, the other option is to stay quarantined for 14 days here in Hawaii." And it's like, okay, number one, I don't want to spend my quarantine in Hawaii. Like, that's just the shittiest. You're looking out the window at the beach every day. Right? Also, I got to pay for that, you know? And so finally, I just said, you know, fuck it. I took a cab back to the airport, went to the Hawaiian Airlines desk, demanded to speak to the manager, started throwing around words like discrimination, violation of civil rights,
wow,
prejudice towards a medical condition, and because I had asthma. And after I explained it all, like, the guy, he was this really jolly gay Hawaiian. He's just like, "Oh, it's so, you're not even sick at all." And I was like, "That's what I've been telling everybody." And so finally they get me on a flight. They wanted to put me on a flight the next day. I go, "Well, you got to pay for my hotel in that case." And they go, "Well, no, we'll get you on an American Airlines flight tonight." And so they got me on. So that nightmare was finally over. So that's my corona story.
Dude, that's an awful story.
Yeah, well, they sent me an email later, and they refunded my ticket, gave me a flight voucher, and offered to pay for my cab and stuff, which wasn't too bad. I mean, they didn't offer to pay for the medical. But...
And this guy, was he old or young, or what the hell was his deal?
He was, like, late 30s. He was there with his wife. And after I coughed even just once, I could hear him go, "Did you hear that? Did you hear that? Did you hear that?"
It's like a movie.
And then I coughed again. And then he goes, "Jesus Christ, this guy's sick." And I could hear him. I'm like, "Oh, fuck, don't cough.
You
again.
Knew
He's
it.
Make it." I coughed the third time. That's when he just you launched it. Into it.
That was it. That was the straw.
Yeah.
And what are the chances, man? Because, you know, you could be in an environment where there's, like, everybody's cool and nobody's worried about it. But then you're in an environment where there's one jackass. Yeah. And now you got to get off the plane. That's a nightmare, dude. I would be so upset, man. There's nothing. So I hate traveling. Yeah. I fucking hate traveling. I hate the bullshit with the airports and the security and protocol. I hate it all. So when things don't go well, like, I've been flagged at security. I've had to get the, like, extra little tests and the fucking swipe your hands for the bomb juice. And I've missed flights because of that shit. And I'm just like, couldn't imagine if I went through what you went through, man. I would be so furious. I'd be furious.
But at the time when you're experiencing it, there's no time for anger. It was just, what the fuck do I do?
Yeah. And you handled it well. Like you said, these are strange times. You don't know what to do. So it's hard to blame them for doing the wrong thing.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't sit there and yell at a flight attendant because she even leaned over at one point and was like, "I've never had to deal with this before in my life." And I'm like, "I get it. No one has." But I mean, there's a cat.
He came to say hello to you. She was on my legs. This is Pebbles.
Pebbles. Nice. Hello, Pebbles.
Pebbles. So you said you got some allergies? Because this is a pet podcast. We got to talk about pets eventually.
Yeah. Well, I was never allowed to have pets because legit pets. Because my mom always told me you're allergic to cats and dogs. And she judged it off of when every time I'd go to my grandma's house who had cats
Let me guess,
and dogs,
you coughed three times.
I coughed three times. My mom started screaming, "Get those pets out of here." But no, I'd go to grandma's house all the time and I'd come home and my eyes are all watery and itchy and I'd be scratching away and I'd be sneezing. And so my mom's like, "Oh, he's allergic to pets." So my whole life, my mom was like, to my older brother and sister, "Sorry, we can't have a cat or dog because Jeff's allergic to cats and dogs." So she bought me hamsters instead. Mm-hmm. And, she got me horseback riding lessons so I could, like, ride a horse every weekend. And then when I was 12, I go to the allergy specialist, who had also seen me when I was a child. And she told me, "I've never been allergic to cats or dogs. I'm allergic to tobacco, and my grandmother was a chain smoker." And then told me, "What I am allergic to is hamster hair and horse hair and rodents." So this whole time, my mom was trying to keep me away from animals I'm allergic to, and then throwing me animals I was allergic to.
Like, she was trying to kill you, man. Are you sure?
Yeah, terrible mother. That's what I tell her every time.
That's crazy. Oh, man. Well, you guys didn't get to grow. Well, hamsters aren't so bad. Were you into hamsters, or it was just like you had no choice? It was a default.
There wasn't much option, right? So, and it was like, you know, it wasn't back when people had some more exotic ones like ferrets and stuff. It was a pretty simple time back then. It was, if you didn't have a cat or dog, maybe you had a hamster or a guinea pig.
Sure. And the hamster and the guinea, it just sat in the cage. It wasn't like your family member.
Well, you'd pull them out and you'd put them in that plastic ball that they would probably suffocate in, right?
The ball.
They'd be running around the ball and...
losing their mind.
I killed my sister's hamster one time because I did it. She got a hamster before me, and I didn't really realize, like, the hamster was in the bowl, and I thought it was like a soccer ball, so I kicked it and totally killed the hamster. I mean,
happens a lot, man.
It was like 4 or 5, but
that's a common story. Like, the hamster ball went down the stairs, or the dog got a hold of the hamster ball with the hamster in it, or shit like that. Or people forget that the hamster's in the ball, and they'll find the dead hamster in the ball like 3 days later.
Yeah.
Shit happens. All kinds of shit, but it's, I don't know, man.
So that's,
I never had a hamster.
Yeah. You weren't missing out much.
I would probably get attached to it. I never thought I'd get attached to the bearded dragon. I thought the bearded dragon just would like sit there and kind of be there. But no, he's like very involved. He wants to interact with us. He like, if I have the dog and cat out and they're playing, he stares out there at the window and bobs his head because he wants to come out and play too. And
but does he bite?
No.
Well, no, that's the thing with a hamster is you just don't know, it'll occasionally bite you.
Oh, really? Yeah, I think I knew that about hamsters. They're bitey. Yeah. This guy, he only wants to bite crickets and mealworms and superworms. And the only time he bit my finger is because I was trying to hand feed him and he got my thumb. And he's got like a row of inverted teeth in his mouth, like a fish. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's so weird. But he didn't even break my skin. Like, he bit me enough that, like, I've seen him eat the crickets, and he fucking destroys these guys.
Yeah.
And he bit my thumb, and it didn't even break the skin, but it left, like, a ridge of, like, teeth marks, like a little tiny little shark creature. It's like, man, this guy is scary, though. He's, like, a really weird fucking animal. I never had a pet like this before.
Yeah, lizards are cool. I had thought about getting not a bearded dragon, I guess, but iguanas or...
Yeah, I think those would be super cool too. My dad had an iguana that was like 6 feet long with the tail. It was giant.
I used to have frogs too, now that I remember, because I used to catch them and then bring them home and put them in the tank.
Are you like in the town you grew up in, as Winnipeg?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's lots of lakes here. We used to go camping all the time, so there were frogs you could catch. We'd catch other things. Keep them until they died, basically.
Yeah, that's pretty normal.
Yeah.
Keep them. Yeah. That's. I did that as a kid too. Like, even when I was a kid, we lived by an alley, so there was all these alley cats, and their lives weren't worth very much. You know what I mean? In the eyes of the neighborhood, like, it wasn't like it. And even now, I live here in Inglewood, and there's like, I promise, when my wife and I moved here 8-9 months ago, I think now, there was probably 6 cats that lived on our street, and in that amount of time, 3 of them have gotten hit by car and died. And I've seen all the carcasses on the side of the road. One I even picked up and put in a garbage can because I felt bad for it. I saw that cat every day, and I felt bad for it. And now I'm like, oh, these cats, this is just what happens to them. This is just a part of their life. There's going to be another 6 cats next year.
Well, we saw that in Korea, right? All those feral cats.
Yep, just like that. Anytime you're in a real city, that's just the thing. I was in Indiana for so long, I didn't know what a real city was.
My my friends had this cat. It was a house cat, and they used to always bring it to their cabin. And one year, it just disappeared in the summer, and they thought it got eaten by another animal. Mm-hmm. And it was either 1 year had passed or maybe 2 years had passed, and they're back at their cabin, and then, boom, the cat shows up on the porch.
Really?
And he was a vicious motherfucker after that. Like, he had been catching his own food. He had all these war wounds. Mm-hmm. And so they brought him back to the city, brought him back into the house, and he was just a changed cat. And every night, he'd look out the window, and he just wanted that window open so he could go out. And so they'd let him out, and he became... like the Heathcliff on the block, like the brawler.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'd come home with like dead animals and stuff. And like,
yeah, no, you can't expect them to be house cats after they've had the beauty, the joy of the freedom of being an outside cat.
And survived Canadian winter.
Oh, like, yeah, that's true, man. Even fucking more intense.
No idea what he had to do.
Dude, he went through some shit. He was like Logan.
Oh, yeah, he was rough and tumbled for sure.
Oh, that's like, great. There's a guy who lives downstairs from us who, when he moved in, he had an inside cat, but I told you there's all those cats outside.
Yeah.
So the cat was meowing all night, so he let the cat outside. And within a week, he was calling me, because everybody in my building knows that I do the animal medicine, that the cat had this giant abscess from a fight wound on the back of its head. And it was a gnarly wound. And I'm like, dude, you got to get that treated, and then you can't let the cat keep going back outside. Those cats that have been here before him... they're going to keep fighting.
It's like little gains, little street gains. Go up and get involved in the gains.
Exactly. He got jumped in. But he's a tough-ass cat. He's a big male cat. And I was wrong because I told the guy to keep the cat inside, but he can't because the cat meows constantly. constantly. Won't let the guy do anything. It'll annoy the neighbors. So he had to let the cat back out. And this cat has dominated the block. Like, look at that. First of all, three of them are dead because they got hit by cars.
A little Tony Montana.
Maybe he took them out. You never know. But now this cat sits on our porch and just like he's got the most confidence and you could walk past him and pet him. Like originally he'd run away from you. But now he sits on the porch. Like, and if you walk past him, he just sits there and all the other cats stay away. And he like took over. And I'm like, holy shit, good for you, Lucas. His name is Lucas. He runs the block.
Runs the catnip industry in the block.
Maybe, man. He's got something in that pot and that planter next to him.
Hey, first time is free, huh? Next time you pay me.
It's a little sample.
Next time you bring me a mouse, okay?
Dude, speaking of which, though, I'm going to break this out on my podcast. A real sad story. You want to hear a sad story?
I'm down.
Dude, I hit a cat with my car yesterday and killed it.
Jesus. Do you know if it was a street cat or did it have a tag?
It had no tag, and I have no idea. Okay, let me tell you the story.
Or did you just remove the tag and pretend like it was a street cat?
I would never do that. Trust me. I would never do that, but I'll tell you what did happen and why I am a piece of shit. So I'm driving. I just left the dispensary. I had just purchased my new cartridge, not even open yet. Because I know a lot of people, when I tell them I just left the dispensary, the first question, they'd be like, oh, so you were high. Like, no. I had just bought it. I hadn't even taken it out of the box yet. I hadn't smoked all day because I was out. I was totally out of weed. So I'm driving and this cat comes out of nowhere right under my wheel. Like I had no opportunity to do anything. Just ran right under me. But at first, I didn't know what it was. I just saw an orange thing out of the corner of my eye. And then in my car, doot-doot. I'm like, okay, maybe it was a plastic bag with something in it. But then I saw the cat run across the street, like after I had ran it over. So I was like, okay, I thought it was a dog, and I thought it was still alive because I saw it run. So it was still alive. So I pull my car around, and I come back, and I'm already like heartbroken and already running through my mind the scenario of what's about to happen. Like either the dog or the cat, I thought it was a dog at the time, needs immediate emergency medical treatment. In which case, I'm going to have to fucking do it, even though I don't want to. Because I don't know if it's a stray. I don't know if it's going to try to bite me. I don't know if it even has an owner. Nothing. So this just was running through my mind. And then I see it on the sidewalk, no more than 10 feet from where I hit it. Just laying on the sidewalk, and it's a big cat, a big orange cat, a big orange tabby. And I'm just like trying not to get too close because the number one thing they teach you, an injured animal will bite you. Like an injured animal is scared and it'll bite you. So keep your distance. And a cat is fucking fast. And I don't know if this is a nice cat or a mean cat. So I'm taking my time. But I can see the cat is still breathing. I can see the abdomen moving up and down, but no movement. So I'm like, okay, what the fuck am I going to do? I'm looking around to see if anybody saw. And then I'm looking at the cat for any like collar tag, nothing. And then I'm seeing how close I was to somebody's house and contemplating knocking on their door to ask, is this your cat? But I know that it might not be. And in that time, this cat could die. What am I going to do? So I call, I Google real quick. I hit a cat. What should I do? Or I hit a dog. What should I do? And it said, call animal control. So I call animal control. They're closed. So then the next thing it says, call the police. So I call the police, they're fucking closed. And they're like, is this an emergency? I'm like, no. So then they're like, okay, we're closed. So then I call an emergency animal hospital. And I've worked at these places, so I know the protocol. If you take the cat in, you're responsible for the finances.
Yeah.
If you want anything done, they're gonna make you pay for it. And I'm like, fuck man, I do not wanna take financial responsibility for this maybe stray cat. But it's still alive, and my conscience is eating at me. So I'm just like, fuck it. I'm going to take it there. I'm going to hand it to them, and I'm going to fucking leave, no matter what they say, no matter what they try to get me to sign, no matter what they want me to do. I'm not going to tell them my name. I'm not going to tell them I'm a vet tech, nothing. I'm going to hand them the cat and pretend like I'm going to pay and then walk away. And what are they going to do? So on my way there, there's a couch on the sidewalk, so I hurry up and take a cushion off and take the cushion cover off and put the cat inside the couch cushion. And I'm carrying it, like run into my car. I got my wife on the phone. Ah, I killed the cat. I'm fucking trying to get to the emergency, blah, blah, blah. And I put the cat in my passenger seat and I'm watching it. And I'm like, you know, I drive a stick shift. So I like need my hands. So I'm driving, I'm putting in the Google, like how to get to the emergency hospital. And as soon as I get to a red light, I reach over to feel the cat's, to see if it's still breathing, and it's not. And I check its pulse. It's no pulse. I check his heart because now I'm sure it's dead. So I can like put my whole hand over his chest. No heartbeat. Check his gum color. Completely pale white. Pupils dilated and fixed. This cat is and I could feel his rib cage just completely shattered. Completely shattered rib cage. And I'm like, man, this cat is dead. Like, there's no doubt in my mind. I'm not a doctor and I don't have my stethoscope with me, but I've been working in animal medicine for a long time. This cat is dead. So now I'm like, what the fuck am I going to do now? So I call back the animal hospital, the emergency place. And I'm like, okay, the cat died in my car. What should I do? Can you guys dispose of it for me? And they're like, no, we don't do that. I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, well, the cat's already dead. We don't do that. And I'm like, fuck, I already know. I already know that they don't, but I'm hoping I talk to somebody nice. Cause yeah. I've worked at a lot of hospitals. Sometimes they'll just take the body for you. Sometimes they'll just be like, drop it off the body. We'll put it in our freezer. They'll take it when they take the rest of them. But technically they're not supposed to do that. They're not supposed to do that. So I had to make a fucking decision. I put the cat in that cushion, that couch cushion cover, zipped it up and put the cat in a garbage can at a park.
Now, you know, there's some homeless guy that thinks he got a free cushion and he hasn't looked inside. He just ignores the smell.
Dude, man, it's like my wife is like, what if it's still alive? I'm like, well, I left it unzipped a little bit and on the top of the garbage heap. So if it wakes up, it could jump out easily, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's well, I mean, it sounds like you've checked everything thoroughly. So
no, man, I had a choice to make, because this cat, say it had a microchip and it has an owner out there somewhere. That's possible. But I also know, if you're a owner of a cat and you let your cat be an outside cat, the chances of it getting hit by a car are huge. I didn't hit it on like a back road. I hit it on Crenshaw, Florence and Crenshaw, like in the middle of South Central, a very busy 4-lane road. Like, it's like, man, I feel bad. A mound of mass. It had a good amount of mass to it. I was like, where it makes you feel bad. Like, that's something that I'll remember, that impact. You ever accidentally hit an animal before?
No.
Yeah, this is the second time. I hit a cat once when I was in high school. When I was a teenager, I hit a cat once. And it was really, like, the same thing. I remember the boop, the doop. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That's what you remember. It's really traumatizing.
My friends from Korea, my friends Nate and Kat, they rescued a cat off the street, like a little kitten. They rescued it and they had to nurse it back to health. And then it lived its life as an indoor cat, hated going outside. Then they moved to Colorado Springs and it started to go outside and feel safe, enjoy nature. And then a week after they were home, like living in the States again, the cat got hit by a car on the street. Like,
saddest shit ever.
Yeah.
It's so sad, but it is also, like, for all the people who listen to the podcast and hear me say this all the time, there are too many cats in the shelters. So if you have a cat and it gets hit by a car, go rescue one from the shelter. There are so many. And I know it's sad. Your cat died. Your cat got hit by a car. I understand that. But once you get through the grieving process, you should go rescue another cat. Because there, yeah. I think, and it's morbid, that I would rather a cat be out and free and get hit by a car at the age of 3 or 4 then live in a cage till it's 8 or 12 and get euthanized. Like, sure, that, yeah. That's worse. And every time I talk about it on the podcast, and people always ask me, like, what's your end goal? What's your end game? I want to open up my own shelter. I think there just needs to be more animal shelters. There's never going to be less animals. People are too irresponsible. There's just too many irresponsible humans out there. So there's always going to be an animal problem. So we just need to have shelters.
So would you be more of a Carol Baskins?
I guess, yeah. You can't pet them.
Yeah, no
puppy pictures.
That's right. They're all rescued, but that's it. Into their cages.
No, I would do like, have you ever seen, they have the dog island, but it's not an island. It's just like a big fucking plot of land where there's just all the rescues from, it's in Peru or some Central American country.
Well, there's Cat Island in Japan.
Oh, it's probably just like that. Yeah.
So that's what you could do with it. Let it run free in Cat Island.
Yeah, but I have a bunch of students who show me these videos and they're like, oh, blah, blah. I'm like, you don't think that they fight and kill each other every day? I'm sure that a big dog community or a big cat community, every day they're fighting and killing each other. And they're not showing you that shit on the YouTube highlight video.
But it's the videos of the Japanese one are pretty, pretty cool, though.
I haven't even seen it. I want to check it out.
Yeah, when people pull up on the island on a boat and stuff, all these cats will run to the shore. Some people are afraid to go onto the island because they don't know what's going to happen with the cats. Which, fair enough, who does?
So people are bringing the cats there?
No. It's just there's all these cats on this island, and I can't remember what the reasoning behind it was, but now it's become like a tourist attraction where people go out and check out the island that's just full of these cats.
Japan's Cat Island, incredible. One day I'll be able to have the feature where I can post YouTube videos into my pod. One day my podcast will have to have a video option. Right now, all audio is great for me because it's easy. But people keep telling me that I should have a video.
You could always record from Zoom right there. You push the record button and
yeah, I recorded a little bit of this one just so I can use it as like a promo clip. But yeah. I don't really like having the video because I don't want to care what I look like is a big part of it.
Yeah, and also I find that videos usually work much better when the people are in the same room.
Oh yeah, for sure. It says the island has 15 people and more than 100 cats. That's got to be more than 100.
Oh, I think it's well more than 100, like from videos I've seen.
2,000? Oh, this is like it was at this amount, and then it was at this amount, and now it's at this amount. I got to read it later. But anyway, that looks cool. I'm going to watch those videos later. Cat Island in Japan. Never heard of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Are you a cat fan?
I like cats. I like dogs. I like them both. I don't know which one I would buy if I bought my first pet. I think probably a dog.
But probably.
I've had the cat sit before for like months at a time, and I dig that you don't have to try too hard with the cat, and the cat kind of takes care of itself. But I'm a player, like I like to play with animals, and so like, you know, dogs are a lot more playful most of the time.
Yeah, people say that a cat is easier. It is easier, I see that, but it is less of a bond, I think.
It's less responsibility, it seems. Yeah. Like
yeah, so people want to go that route, especially comics, because they're not home a lot, so I understand. It's better than, neglecting your dog. It's better to have a cat. But if you can't be home, don't get a pet in general.
Yeah, I got enough problems with my houseplants. So.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, me too. Speaking of the devil, I'm looking at mine right now. Like, he's not looking too good. I water it when I realize I've forgotten to water it for a long time.
Well, I've got numerous plants, but I also have an indoor tree. And so when I went to Asia, I had to convince one of my friends to come here every couple of days and water.
Really?
And it felt like being a pet owner because I was like, oh, I got this responsibility now of having to take care of these things.
The whole time you were in Korea, you had somebody coming by to water the tree?
No, I meant like when I recently went to February.
Oh, okay.
Because I was supposed to be gone for a month. I ended up being gone for 2.5 weeks.
Okay.
But so I was going to have someone come in and water all the plants and the tree. Because I love my tree. My tree is like in the perfect, it number one, it brings the room together, but it's also just in the perfect place.
Have you been in the same place since you came back from Korea?
For the last year, yeah. Okay. What happened is because my parents are snowbirds and they live in the States for half the year.
You said Hawaii, right?
No, they live in Phoenix. I was in Hawaii.
Okay.
But they live in Phoenix for half the year. So when I came back in February 2018, they were still in Phoenix for about 4 months. So I stayed in their condo. Until they came back and stuff, and then stayed with them for a little bit to kind of help take care of my dad. And then moved out to this place. And this place is like, I love this apartment. It overlooks the city. I've got a huge balcony. Like my balcony is like it's as long as my apartment is. It's a
wow.
You can get 30 some people in the balcony.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
And it's like the top floor of the building. So it just overlooks everything.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. And it overlooks downtown where they do all the fireworks during the events. So it's I love my apartment.
Is it better than any place you lived in Korea?
Yeah, except Rudy and I did have a pretty swank little place that, you know, Benny Fax used to live in it.
It's not the place I visited that you and him were living. No,
yeah, would be where we had two floors.
No, like I visited one time where I think he was just living in your place for a while.
Rudy?
Yeah.
No, yeah, okay. He wasn't living there. He was just sleeping on the couch during a weekend, I think.
Oh, okay.
No, after that, we moved into Benny Fax's old place, and it had two floors, and we had, it was three bedroom, two floors, a really big living room, and then upstairs, we had what we called the dance floor, where, like, it was empty, so if we had a party, it could be, like, the little dance floor.
That's cool.
And
how long did you guys live there, or where was it? What part of Seoul?
It was in Haebangcheon.
Oh, in Haebangcheon. Oh, that's cool.
And it was, we were there, I think we were there almost 2 years.
So that was like a last hurrah, that situation?
Yeah, totally. And then once he left, we gave up the apartment. And actually, Justin Ivey was living with us towards the end, too.
Oh, I remember Justin. Justin was in Chicago. I think I actually hung out with him once in Chicago, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think, that's where he is right now.
Yeah. I had a really nice apartment, my last apartment in Korea, too. I lived in Haebangcheon. I lived right across the street from... what was it? What's the name of that bar? Pete's?
No. Philly's?
Philly's. Yeah. Right across from Philly's, but like across from the, you know, there's a like a Family Mart on the corner.
Yeah.
I lived across from that, and I don't know if you ever went to that apartment, but it was so nice compared to anywhere else I ever lived. It was so sweet, but I only lived there for like 6 months.
Was that the Chris James apartment or no?
Chris James apartment?
Oh, no. Okay, you know what? That was C. Charles who lived at Chris James's.
No. I used to live with the guy Chad, who was like the manager, owner of Bull and Barrel.
Yeah, yeah, Chad. And he had a dog, right?
Yeah, I lived with him for a while, and I moved out because of the dog. The dog bit my fiance and pissed all over the place all the time, and I told him that he needed to do something about it, so he told me to move out.
Yeah, Chad got in that fight with Dan Weiberg.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He tried to do the flying kick at him.
That was with Tom Rhodes, right?
Yeah, that was with Tom Rhodes.
Dude, that guy Chad, I mean, I got along with him fucking awesome. So when I told him about the dog problem, I thought he was going to totally be cool about it. I did not predict that he would choose the dog side.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Chad was fine. I like Chad. And he was, you know, he was cousins of Mike, too, and I love Mike.
Right. And me and Chad stayed friends. I didn't get mad at him. It was his place. You know, it's not like I could be mad at him. Yeah. But then I got my own place, and it was really nice. But then I left. I left right after. I had the first nice place I had. I had lived in other nice parts, but, like, far away from everybody, where it was, like, an hour bus ride if I wanted to see any of my friends. I had nice apartments in the middle of nowhere. But every time I lived near Itaewon or near anywhere I hung out socially, they're always tiny, tiny little places.
And I guess, you never saw when I lived in the theater school.
No.
Because I had, when I moved in there, and do you remember Paul Duffy?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So
Irish
I moved
guy,
in there,
right?
Yeah, Irish, Scottish. And,
Scottish.
Well, he was born in Ireland but raised in Scotland. And so I move into this performing arts center. It's got its own gated campus. It's like huge. And we move into this building, and on the weekends, there's nobody on campus. It's just the people, like, we lived in the building we taught in. But then, you know, we had a backyard, which was like a huge park that was just us on the weekend. And they accidentally gave me the master key to the entire building. And so in the building was it was a 200 seat theater. There was a movie theater that had 50 seats. There was a gym. There was a basketball court. There was a karaoke room. There was behind the theater was a costume room. So I used to have these parties. People
you had a costume
over.
Party.
Yeah, we'd get drunk. We'd go to where all the costumes were. We'd dress in costumes, have a costume parade. Then go to like the kindergarten room and do shots on the table.
I remember. You invited me, but I didn't go. I remember.
Yeah, yeah. And then Paul Duffy pushed it too far and had a party one time and got caught on camera like drinking in the kindergarten room and leaving booze in there. So they took away, because I had made a copy of the master key and given it to him. So they took it away from him, but when they asked me for my key to check, they wanted to see if I had a copy too. I gave them a different key, and it didn't work on the doors, and so they're like, oh, you don't have a master, okay. And then that was it. I was back to me having the run of the place again.
No, I remember, I think because like Aaron and Rudy and all them had gone to those parties, right? Because I remember feeling like, oh man, I missed out, but whatever reason, I think because I still lived far away. Like for a lot of the time that I was doing comedy with you guys, I lived far. Like I didn't move closer to Seoul until 2012, and then I left in the end of 2013.
Yeah, and then I would have been gone out of that place by 2012. So, but that was it was a great place, but it was eventually it was too hard to live in the same place you teach. And
I could see if
I came home at night with a lady friend, security guards would tell the principal of the school, and the principal of the school would be, oh, Japo. I hear Friday night you come home, a strange girl. Is this your girlfriend? And I'd be like, nope. And he's just like, oh, okay. And he's like, you know, students can see if you bring home girl. I'm like, no, they're not. No, they're not in the building at nighttime. Like, and if they are, they shouldn't be there.
I had a landlord one time who would watch the camera and ask me about girls that I was bringing there. I'm like, man, I lived in a building that my school rented all the rooms out to teachers. Do you know what I mean? So like year after year, the same building was full of their teachers. So the building manager felt like he was also our boss. It's like, no, dude, you are not, you got nothing to do with me. Like you're just the building manager.
The other thing too is the people that would take the garbage out would also rat out what was in your garbage. So if I was like drinking on a Thursday night and then taught kindergarten in the morning, they'd be like, oh, the cleaning lady said that, there was so much alcohol in your garbage today.
Because I was hanging out with Steph. Remember Steph?
Yeah, of course. Steph Cole. Yeah. Right?
No, there's Steph Coe on the internet.
Yeah, well, that's what I...
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, so I was hanging out with her when I first moved to LA. When I first moved to LA, my three best friends were people I met in Korea. And now I don't talk to any of them. But no, I was happy to see that. I'm always happy to see like when people from Korea are still doing creative stuff.
It's like Palmiter. Palmiter just amazes me with what he's gotten around doing.
Yeah, he wrote a book, he's doing murals, he's doing stand-up, he's selling art. It's like, dude, that guy, to have him on the podcast, I was so like honored, you know, just like that he would take the time. And then, but talking to him, you realize he's, you know, he's on a similar journey as the rest of us, where he's trying a bunch of stuff and seeing what hits. All the things that his heart and soul are driving him to do, and then he's just like wading in the water, waiting to see what happens next. Where's the next wave coming? But you know, I feel like a lot of the comedians or just artists in general that I've had on the podcast or had the luxury of calling a friend, we're all kind of on a journey. Like how much success you have is relative to like you're always trying to do something next. What are you gonna do next? What's next? What's next? And I like that about all my comedian friends and everybody that I have on the podcast, that I always tell people, you've done something to personally inspire me, or I wouldn't let you on the podcast or ask you to be. And you know, I really find that like you're always innovating, and you were doing the same thing back then. When the rest of us were just doing stand up, you were already doing the trivia, like another outlet, another thing that people could gather around and have a good time, have some laughs, that you orchestrated and choreographed and directed and put together your whole self, right? You put together all those slideshows, all those animations, like, man, and nobody else was doing that. You were the only one, right?
Well, I mean, some other people were doing it, but not to the production value that I was.
That's what I mean. Into, yeah. And what about the funny videos that Nevada had? Were you guys doing that together?
Which video? No.
He had like the porno where it was just like hilarious, like inserts where it was like, instead of a dick, it was a lollipop and all that.
Oh,
it was like a compilation. It was like a compilation.
Well, he had some, okay. I had some stuff that I had found that I used to show. And then he had some stuff that he had actually made, some videos that, yeah, he had made with the porno stuff in, but yeah, he had done that on his own. It's just, we showed it together.
Dude, it was so fun. Nobody that brought the show up. Like that was like, you know, right now when we do the roast battle and those yahoos come from the side of the stage and everybody hates them. You know what I mean? But when you're there, the energy, because it's so silly, because it's so like, where the fuck did that come from? It makes it so much more fun for a comedy environment. It automatically like shuts down your inhibitions, you know? Your inhibitions are down because there's this silliness going on. You realize it's not like work. It's not like a family party. It's not like you're talking to your coworkers or your wife or whatever. It's not like that. It's totally different. So when those dicks were on the screen, I had never seen anything like that. And I remember dying laughing. But then you see it week after week after week, and then you start to enjoy watching other people see it for the first time. You know what I mean? And just dying laughing. Go ahead.
I used to make those K-pop videos too.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so it was always a good way before comedy shows just to get the audience warmed up.
Right, exactly. But like super creative. I've never seen that again. I've been doing comedy a long time now. I haven't seen anybody doing what we were all doing in Korea, like just creating comedy scenes with our own little weird thoughts. Yeah. What about Nevada? Any contact with him? Keep touch with him at all?
Well, last I talked to him is when he had just moved back, and then I sent him a message when he was in the hospital there.
Right.
But no, I haven't. It's kind of hit and miss who I've kept in contact with. I mean, Rudy, we've just kept in contact. Like, he visited me here in Winnipeg when he was living in Minneapolis. And then me and Rob and this other guy, Mike, who I don't know if you knew him. You might have been gone by the time he came to Seoul. But we all met in Vegas for New Year's Eve and partied up there.
Oh, that's awesome.
And there's still a couple of people that I talk to regularly. Like back there, there's still a few people I talk to. And Jonathan Borrello I still talk to almost every day.
I talked to John on on Twitter. John and I like John's Twitter. I follow his Twitter. He's funny.
Yeah, we just I think it's more me, but I just like I send him stupid messages all the time. He plays with it. Like that's the whole thing is I'll send him something stupid about his elbows, and then he'll play with it, and then then we get bored of it. We stop talking, and then one of us will send somebody something.
No. I mean, I feel really terrible. Like you know, all my friends from Korea. Like I hardly talk to anybody. I mean, I could blame it on being married or whatever, but for whatever reason, I hardly talked to anybody from back then. So like, that's why I like having people on the podcast. I had Brian and Adam and Rudy and James and now you. And I had Wilfred and Michael Beagley. He's also a guy I met in Korea. And I want to have like, you know, it would be great to have Daniel Kennedy on, or even Dan Weiberg or Fahad or any of these, even Aaron, like anybody that was around for those days. Because I like to listen to the podcast. You know, sure, I listen to my conversation with Rudy. I probably listened to that podcast 17 times just because it reminds me of a time where like my life was very different. And then I have another podcast with my friend Henry, and Henry was my best friend for so long. And it's just nice to hear his voice talk to me. You know what I mean? I like miss it. And it's just like these little weird things about having a podcast that you don't realize you're going to get attached to, and the listeners get attached to also, you know, the things that they ask about. And the Korea and experience, people are just like floored. People can't believe that we were doing that. That before Joe Rogan, you know what I mean? We were already trying to do comedy differently than anything we saw on TV.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And like you'd said, I guess most people started out there. And so it was a very welcoming environment for the most part, I found, more so than I would say some of the scenes over here, mm-hmm. Back in North America, because nobody really had, most people I don't think had really any ambition. They just wanted to do it because it seemed like the right fit for them. And, you know, Stand Up Soul was always really good with giving new timers some time. And, yeah, and I thought it was more or less a pretty open scene.
Yeah, I think it was very welcoming to an extent. I mean, there was some filtering, but I thought that it did a good job of giving the right people a lot of stage time. Like, if you really, yeah. really wanted a lot of stage time, you could get it. If you were funny and ambitious and, you know.
Well, and if you were putting in the time and showing exactly. that you were really into it, I mean.
Right. Yeah. You're going to find the stage time. And how did you even know about Stand Up Soul? How did you find it?
I think I had just seen it advertised online, or there was Brian's original poster at Stand-Ups at Rocky Mountain, but I hadn't really thought about doing it until I ran into Brian at Tony's in like I feel like it was December of 2009, and I did the letters, and then Brian was like, "Oh, you should come out and do Stand-Up Soul," and so then I think it's in January I went to go do my first one.
Wow.
Which was funny because that's when I also met Brian's initial wife there, Janice.
Right.
And so she had talked to me, and I thought she was just some stranger in the crowd. I was like, oh, well, you know, this guy Brian runs this. And they put it on. I'm telling her everything she knows. And so she just blinked her eyes like, yeah, that's my husband. I was like, oh, okay, yeah. Well, that's, yeah.
I remember Janice too. It's, you know, just having Brian on here, it is hard to remember that there was like a – you know, when Stand Up Soul was brand new and Brian like had just came back to Korea, you know, because I get into it, Stand Up Soul, and I think everybody's new, this is all new, everything's new. So to find out like other people like Brian had left Korea and came back, somebody like my friend Richard had left Korea and came back, you know, so I had all these people that I thought were new to Korea and having this really like grand experience. Like Brian started Stand Up Soul. My other friend had this great job at Kongi University. It's like, oh, people just show up here and bam, everything's good for them. Like, oh, no. People have tried this once or twice or three times and now it's different for them.
Yeah, I had come back. That was, yeah. I came back 2009.
And Rudy also. Rudy left and came back.
Yeah.
See, all that. So it's like, wow. And I just remember those realizations when I had been there long enough, like a little bit longer, got to know you guys a little bit more. And then that's when I think Stand Up Soul really started to take off, when people started feeling more confident and I was confident in you guys. And man, you guys were just uber talented. Like when I saw Rudy performing and I'm just like, everybody loves this dude. The whole room loves this guy.
Oh, he's like, extremely affable. He takes a lot of risks. Mm-hmm. And he's got no problem just abandoning the joke to talk to the audience.
Absolutely. Something so unique, something so like valuable, just that little quality that he has. That, and I talk to him on podcasts, I'll tell him till I'm blue in the face that you're so fucking likable, and it's genuine. That's the thing.
And I hated him the first time I met him. And hate's a strong word. I don't really hate anybody, but I disliked him. And sure. I watched him do an improv show, and I thought he was really hokey, and I was like, ugh. Oh. And I was a bit of an improv snob, having done it back here for years. And I was like, ugh, that guy. and then, yeah, I was sitting at a table with Brian, and Brian introduced him to me, and I shook his hand and then went back to talking to Brian and stuff, just thinking like, oh, I don't want to talk to that guy. And then we were booked on a show in Bupyeon the English guy was leaving, tall, thin English dude. I can't remember his name. Michael, I think.
I don't know.
And he was his going away party. And so it was me, Brian, Michael as the host, and then Rudy. And I went up first, I think, and did whatever. And then Rudy was up after me, and the microphone kept having problems, like the wire would fall out or it would lose sound. And so what happened eventually was Rudy just like threw the microphone aside and crawled on. There was like an empty bar next to the stage. They had two bars in the bar, and there was an empty bar next to the stage. So Rudy just sprawled across it like he was laying on his bed, and then put his hand like on his chin and just delivered his whole stand-up from up there. And I have it on videotape. That's immediately I fell in love with him. I was
telling you, very similar. I remember, not that I didn't like Rudy, but I definitely thought he was corny, but I saw him like multiple times, like turn me around, you know, like the ability to turn a crowd around is so difficult, but like, you know, valuable as a comedian. And he did that to me where I think he's being corny, but then he starts wrapping himself in the curtain the stage and being like borderline, like pornographic. And it's so funny. It's just so funny.
I know exactly the time you're talking about.
Yeah, I bet. Where it's just like, man, this guy, like you can't help but love him. And when I had him on the podcast and he's open and honest and telling me about his journey and about his struggles. And I'm just like, man, now I know why I liked working with him. And why. And when I had Adam on, why I liked working with him. And now I have you on, why I liked working with you guys. You guys are just like all very different from me, which is already interesting. And then very talented comedians, like just very funny people. And I wonder what's going to happen next. I wonder where you're going to be, and Adam and Rudy and Daniel Kennedy. And I see Sonny blowing up, you know, these, not that he's a comic, but people that were being creative with us in Korea at the same time.
Sonny. Sorry, give me a second. Yeah.
Best food review show ever. Yeah. Have you seen how he's doing?
Oh, yeah.
Killing it. And then even people like Elliot Ashby and, you know, just these people that we were there with. I want to know what happens next. I feel like, because of the corona, I think the internet was something that I got much deeper into my internet abilities and knowledge because I was in Korea. It forced me to have to talk to people from home over the internet. It forced me how to learn how to use the internet, download movies and use a torrent site and get a VPN blocker and all this stuff. So I like had some internet awareness because of my experience out there. And then doing like what we're doing right now, speaking to people over a long distance.
Hey, Albert, why did you need the VPN blocker?
You know, I was trying to watch PBS, you know?
Yeah, I know. I used to try to watch a lot of PBS. And kept coming up blue screen every time.
Some fucking blue screen. But I promise, man, I was like internet retarded before I moved to Korea, but then people taught me so much. Not just Korean people, like my foreigner friends who learned cool stuff from Korean people then would teach me. And I was like, oh, we're like ahead of the time over here. Everybody's ahead of the time. Smartphones and, you know, fast internet.
Yeah, their internet there is insane. The speed, Jesus.
Yeah.
Even coming home, like, I was complaining to my friends going, why is the internet so slow? And they're like, what are you talking about? It's pretty quick. And I'm like, no, it's like, it's slow.
All right, we're about to take a commercial break. We're at our 1 hour. We're going to take a commercial break so you can take a bathroom or refill your drink. And then we're going to do another clap.
Okay.
What's up, Pet Peeves podcast listeners? If you or someone you know has a cat and you notice this cat drinking from the bathroom sink or from the bathtub, it's because cats prefer cold, fresh, flowing water. Most people leave a bowl of water on the floor all day and cats don't like to drink it. This causes a lot of cats to develop kidney diseases later in their life. We'd like to recommend a plug-in automatic water fountain to our listeners. The Purr Power Pet Fountain is perfect for cats or dogs. It has a centralized fountain, which is great because we had one where it was on the side and my cat and dog would make a big mess. The sound of the water flowing will attract them to the fountain and they can drink fresh, flowing water all day. It does come with a filter that needs to be cleaned and changed from time to time, similar to a Brita water filter. Use our Amazon affiliate link in the description to purchase the Per Power Pet Fountain, and you will help support the Pet Peeves podcast. I recommend this for any pet owner out there who wants to prevent kidney failure and kidney problems in their cat or dog, and for people who just want to get their cats out of the sink and out of the bathtub. Use the Amazon affiliate link in the description and help the Pet Peeves podcast grow. Thank you guys, and let's get back to the episode. All right, thank you guys for that commercial break. You know, we do want you guys to get that cat fountain, and I think it'll be the same cat fountain commercial and a lot of episodes. We're just trying this Amazon affiliate link sponsor thing. So thank you guys. If you actually do want to buy that cat fountain, click the link. You will help the Pet Peeves podcast grow. All right, Jeff, so we're back. And we were just talking about the luxury we had of being in Korea and then learning from that experience. But at the same time, like we were talking about before, maybe we were there too long. Is that something that you could agree with?
Yeah, I would say that.
Definitely. Yeah, I could agree that.
I would say about 2 years too long.
I think I was there about, I should have never came back after Thailand. Remember when I went to Thailand?
I remember you coming back from Thailand.
I should have never came back. I should have stayed gone. I listened to my instinct.
But I think that it was still a good thing that you left Thailand.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't stay there.
Yeah.
No, Thailand was like, I knew early on that Thailand was just going to turn me into somebody I didn't want to be. I'll put it that way. I had met a lot of people there, and none of them had like good backstories. You know what I mean? Everybody's reason for being there long term was something shady.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's definitely, like, I would say the 10% that are, you know, like, say, Brian. Brian's not there for shady reasons.
Yeah, but I didn't meet him, you know?
Yeah, no, I know.
Yeah, but I was out there.
Yeah, more of the people that, you probably would just meet as more of a vacationer or a tourist.
Right, but, you know, you meet these people that hang out around the vacationers and the tourists just because they're trying to take advantage, you know? Sure. And then you meet those people, and it's like, oh, I don't want to get caught up in this life. And then even, you know, you would meet the legitimate people that have a good stability around them there. But even them, like, I was like, oh, I don't want this life. I just don't want this life. This is not the life that I want. As good as it sounded before I went to Thailand, when I was actually living it and like breathing it day after day, I was like, oh, I need to go home. I knew it then. Like, I need to go back home. I need to like connect with something real. But, you know, I had the girl in Korea, and that brought me back over there when it shouldn't have.
Yeah, there were certain parts in Korea where I'd be looking at a group of people and me thinking, like, I do not want to be those people in a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And it was the people that just you knew were going to be lifers that didn't have, they were showing no improvement on their life. Like,
yeah, no.
You know, there's people that have done great out there. Like, especially a lot of people that are involved with Soul Players. Like, they've really built something, they've built a nice community, and they've all individually got kind of, there are things that they do that are, they can be quite proud of. But then right. There's, you know, there's people that they just end up working at the same academy for years and years, never getting a raise, and just looking for their vacation when they can go to Thailand for the week. And then, you know, just drink.
Yeah, but that's a similar, you know, kind of lifestyle decision as somebody would do that here. You know, like just have your 9-to-5 job and look forward to the weekend and drink.
But over there, you know, your apartment's paid for, so like there's that comfort and like,
oh yeah, no,
there's a lot less responsibility in your life.
No, for sure. Once you get comfortable there, it's going to be hard to convince me that it'll be just as comfortable somewhere else.
Yeah, and then of course there is always the fear, right? Like people coming back to North America or just back to their home countries.
It's terrifying.
Everybody, like when I left, it felt like I was leaving jail because mm-hmm. so many people were just like, you're going to be back, man. You can't hack it on the outside.
Dude.
And you know, there's nothing out there for you. You're never going to get a job. I'll see you back in 6 months. It's like they're rooting against you.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
So I lucked out. I came back at the perfect time. I got a job right away. And within a month, I felt secure being back here. Whereas a lot of people, like Rudy, for his first year and some, was just miserable. And I mean, he had his happy moments too, but he was just generally like, I don't know what to do. And
yeah, go back to his episode. That's what most of the episode was about, that he was struggling, but he was still optimistic.
Yeah.
And a lot of people like his episode. His episode, besides me liking it, a lot of people like it.
Oh, I listened to it before. I listened to him and Palmiters before.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, his message is real powerful. Like, you know, struggle, 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 but you got to want what you want and go for it no matter what.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that about his episode. And, you know, I just want everybody to do the same thing. Just keep finding ways to be interesting. Otherwise, you're going to get stuck in that rut one way or another, stuck in a rut, whether it be in South Korea or Northwest Indiana or even here in LA. Like, you know, when you try to get something and you don't get it right away, then you fall into a rut. I feel like people go out to Korea because they want the experience. They want to learn a new language. They want to expand their cultural horizons. But then they get a good job and the rent's paid and they find a good place to eat and, you know, the whatever. And then they kind of settle. But I don't think that's the reason that they went out there. How many people are going out to Korea to be a lifer? You think there's a lot of them?
Well, yeah, there's not a lot that go out with the intention. Like, right. Most of us just thought, okay, 1 year contract, I can do that.
1 year. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought.
And then you just, there is a certain level of comfort that just wants you to stay there. Or you do what a lot of us did is after your first year, you come home and then you realize, oh, so much less responsibility over there. And
it's a lot more fun. Why did you go in the first place?
I was just tired of what I was doing, and I was doing the letter show stuff. I was still doing improv stuff, and I was getting just tired of the routine, I guess, and wanted to just try something new. And my friend Ken was over there. This guy I met in university, who I still work with him today, actually, but. He was over there, so he was like, hey, yeah, why don't you come over? It's fun. And all you need is your university degree and a passport. And he goes, that's it. That's all you got to do for the paperwork. And I checked how much I got paid, converted that into Canadian, because, you know, Canadian is not worth as much as American or Korean. And then it was, that's it, no brainer. Right. Went over there. And I just for the year was the plan, and to save enough money to tour and do the Fringe Festival circuit the following year with the letter show. That was the original plan. Mm. And then I stayed for a year and a half and came home for a year and a half. And during that year and a half, most of my friends had moved to Toronto or another city, or some friends had got married, had kids, and it just was not as happy as I thought I was going to be back home. And the responsibility of paying rent and stuff kind of weighed on me. And so I just said, ah, screw it. I'm going to go back to Korea for another year or two.
No, I was terrified to leave Korea. So much so that when I left Korea to go to Thailand, I was never supposed to come back to Korea. I was supposed to go from Thailand to the States. I had all my shit with me. I had shipped everything in boxes to the United States. And the only thing with me was like my clothes. So I was supposed to go from Thailand back to the States. But then the ex happened, but that's how scared I was. And even after her and I broke up and I was in Korea ready to come back, I was terrified. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I was lucky enough to find an okay job right away, like $15 an hour, but I was living on my sister's couch, so I didn't have any rent to pay. So that was not bad. But then I started giving her like $200 a month, which isn't a lot, you know, and I didn't have a car. So you have like way more money. As soon as you don't have a car, you automatically have more money.
Yeah.
And it wasn't terrible. I got pretty lucky. When I left Korea, I came back to more money than I had before Korea. Because before Korea, I had a job, but I made $13 an hour. But I had a car, and I was paying rent. So I was super broke compared to moving to Korea and made about like $18.50 an hour, I think it worked out to. But they paid for my apartment, and I had no vehicle, and they fed me one or two meals a day. I had like three times as much money as I had before. But then when I came back to the States, my money situation wasn't terrible until I moved to LA and got a car and had to pay rent. Then I was broke again.
Oh, jeez. Do you still have that car?
I still have the same car.
Yeah. You hit the cat.
Yeah. Still the same car. 2015, I bought it out of desperation because I was living with a friend from Korea who I moved into his grow house. He had a nice grow op, 300 plants, making about 40 grand a year off of the sales. And he was using me to help him like farm, but then the roast battle started going well. So I started getting booked all the time. So then I was never home and he got really pissed. He got really mad. So I had to move out. I had to move out with nowhere to go and no fucking plan, and everything fucking fell apart. And that's when I left LA the first time. So this is my third attempt at LA. This is my third attempt.
LA is your new Korea.
Yeah, no shit. For a lot of people, man, it's a very similar story. Like the people you meet out here, you think that they're doing comedy. Oh, everything's going great for him in comedy. Wow, how's he doing all that? Oh, he left and came back. And this is his third time. And it's a lot of stories like that. You have the phenoms, you know, the one percenters, the people that are good looking and talented and hardworking, sure. You know, and then you have everybody else. So I'm, you know, it's like, it's hard to find yourself, but I feel like I've already been, you know, moved into a corner of where I have to keep my job now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm married. I have an apartment. I got four pets. I have a vehicle, blah, blah, blah. So now I can't lose my job. This is the first time in my whole life that I can't lose my job. I've always been in the position where I don't give a fuck if I lose my job. I'll just get another one. But this job pays me more than I've ever made before and given me a title that actually looks good on a resume. So it's like, fuck, man, is this just what happens when you're over 35? Like, little by little, comedy just seems like less and less of a good idea to keep doing stand-up and not get paid for it.
You just also might lose your general interest in it, or it's not as important to you as what else you're building. I mean, you know, you got marriage to work with, you've got your podcast to work with, you've got it's not like you're just laying down and I give up on all this like self-expression.
No, you
find other forms, you find things that work with your schedule that you're happy with.
No, I've gotten really lucky. Because of the podcast, my friends that are complete comedy assholes, you know what I mean? Like if they don't think you're a comic, they're going to tell you that no, you might call yourself a comic, but none of us consider you a comic. And it's only because of the podcast and the amount of success I've been able to have and not making money off of the podcast or getting any real stage time off the podcast is that I've actually been able to help a lot of people with their pets. Ton of people with their pets, I've been able to help easily, you know, like with barely doing more than I would do for any, you know, just like talking with you in a conversation about animals or your pet, but you know, 100, 200 people listened and then they took that advice and told other people, then it gets back to you. It's like, I go to do an open mic and they don't even know my name. They know me as the Pet Peeves podcast guy. And I'm like, holy shit, how did that happen? That was never in the cards. That was never on my goal list. It just kind of happened. And as for years and years and years, I didn't want to be seen as the veterinary comic or the Mexican comic. Those are two things like I actively try to avoid. But the animal thing, I'm way more willing to lean into because I can actually teach people.
Took me the longest time not to call you Alberto.
You and everybody else.
I don't know why. I guess it's because your last name is Escobedo. And like for some reason, it just melted together.
Yeah, it happens all the time, man. And they call me Alberto, and I call it, hey, thanks, man. Thanks for adding that racist O. Gets a good crowd reaction every time. But I don't care. I don't give a shit. My mom should have named me Alberto. It would have been more Mexican. But I was named after my uncle, who's named Albert. His name's not Alberto.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like at Stand Up Soul one time, you were introduced as Alberto, and then I just thought your name was Alberto after that for a while.
Brian Elward called me Alberto Escobar or Escobibo or Escobardo every single time. I don't think Brian Elward ever got my name right.
I know I've done that with so many other people too.
And, Brian Elward thought me and Fahad were the same person for like a year. Yeah, those are good times.
I
had Brian on right now. Brian has not changed whatsoever. At all.
We just exchanged message the other day, but I was actually, so the other day I listened to Palmiters and I listened to Rudy's, but did you put his up yet?
No, like two in the hole right now.
Yeah, I was going to listen to it too, but then I didn't see it, so I listened to
James Elias Island and Brian Elward, I recorded on the same day, but those are still, there's a one going to be released like tomorrow, and then Brian and then James, but that'll be like 2-4 weeks from now.
Yeah, I wish I could really see James's new stuff. Like when he left Korea, he was so good. Yeah. And his Spider-Man bit. I don't know if you ever saw it, but where he reads the lyrics to the themes, the 60s theme song of Spider-Man.
But
he reads off the lyrics and then just kind of comments on each line. And it's genius.
No, he was one of the last people I did shows with. Like one of the last, I didn't even know him, right?
Yeah.
And I got booked on a show with this guy. Like the other comedians knew him and I didn't know him. And they booked us on the same show. And he was so funny. I was like, holy shit, where did this young guy? And then he was one of the guys. I'm like, so you're going to stay in Korea for a while? He's like, no, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
I'm like, don't leave. We need you. But
that was my attitude towards him. Yeah. It was just like, stay, please stay.
Yeah. But when he told me that he's not going to stay, it almost like made me look at myself.
Yeah.
Like, damn, why is this funny guy he doesn't want to be a big fish in a small pond. He wants to go back to where there's other comedians. And I'm like, man, I need that. I need to go be where there's a bunch of other real comics, not a bunch of people who are just trying comedy.
You know, there was a guy that came just as James was leaving. I'm not going to say his name, but he came and the very first time he got up, he killed. And every single time he got up, he killed. And we talked to him. He's like, yeah, I did a little bit back home. And so we put him on so many shows. When we had one of the big shows, we had him open for, we might have had him open for Canadian. I can't remember. One of the times he was there. But it wasn't until just as I was leaving Korea and Rudy had already left, Rudy went home and went to a comedy club and saw this one performer. And the guy did all these jokes. He's like, hey, what do I know those jokes? And then he suddenly realized, oh my God, that guy's been telling these jokes in Korea. And he had basically ripped off a good 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes of this guy's sets. And so Rudy confronted him. He admitted to like, yeah, I took two jokes or whatever, but I dug in deeper because, you know, I always used to videotape every stand-up soul. I dug in deeper and it was a good like 20 some minutes and I confronted him going, dude, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, I was just insecure and I didn't want to try out my own stuff.
Wow.
My stuff wouldn't work unless I used this other guy's stuff and connected it to mine. And I was like,
that's crazy.
We could have booked other people that deserved that time that we gave you instead of you getting up. And so
I bet that happened more than you would think. I remember, there was a time when you couldn't really like catch somebody in stealing a joke, but now it's pretty fucking easy.
Yeah. Well, and the worst part is, too, this guy went to go tour Vietnam and I think Thailand, and we put in a good word for him with some of the people we knew.
What? And he was probably doing this other guy's material the whole time?
Yeah, he was for sure, because I mentioned it to this guy Nathan in Vietnam, and he's like, oh, yeah, he did that joke. I'm like, ah, that was not
Wow.
Yeah.
Dude, that's so disappointing. Damn, man. You give a comic a chance, and you're going to ruin it for the rest of us.
Yeah. Like, and I really... Because otherwise, we thought he was amazing. Like he was. It was.
See that? Yeah. Did you ever? I've had that thought in my mind before. When there's like a somebody. Oh, this is my first time, and they're really funny. I'm like, all right, what's going on here? Yeah. Did you write all those jokes? Did you?
Yeah.
Because sometimes you'll hear a joke, and I'm like, man, that's so good. Did you write that? But I just meet so many phenoms out here. Just like some 20-year-old kid will get on stage that you're sure has no perspective, and you're like, what the fuck is he doing here? And then he'll murder.
Yeah,
and you'll be like, God damn it, I was wrong again.
I was down in Phoenix last year, and I know some of the people that run the scene down there, plus like some people like Tom Rhodes or like Jimmy Schubert have put in good words for me at the comedy clubs down there.
That's awesome.
So I've done a bunch of shows down there, and there was this one kid that got up just at a independent night. He got up and just killed, and he was 19 years old. And he had driven in from LA. He's originally from Arizona, but moved to LA when he was 18. And afterwards I was like, oh man, it's great. How long have you been doing this? And he told me like 3 years. So like when he was like 15 or 16. Mm-hmm. And then I checked him on the net and he had been on Conan already.
Wow.
At like
19. What's his name? Do you know?
I'd have to look it up, but he was just so natural.
Yeah.
Like just didn't look like he'd even have to write anything. He just started talking and he was so funny.
But I like that. I mean, I like that in the situations where I'm with me and all my buddies and we're talking mad shit about all the comedians that we think are not good. And then this kid will get up and murder. And then we all like bring him up. We all want to applaud him and like reward him and make him like keep doing it. Because as much as we're haters, we're also, you know, cheerleaders. Like we're hating. We're talking shit because it's funny. But if you're actually good and you can like make a name for yourself, you got to do it. Cause I love comedy more than I love being right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I never really took the position of watching people and shit talking them with other people. But here, my problem was as soon as I got off stage, I'd go have some drinks and a lot of times I wouldn't watch the people. So like people get off and be like, did you see that? I had a great set. And I'm like, I heard everyone laughing. But I didn't listen to what you were saying.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's funny you mentioned that. We were just in a group chat, and one of our friends hosts a show, right? And another friend of ours just recorded an album. And the guy who hosts the show was like, dude, I never heard any of those jokes before. And he's like, what are you talking about? I tell him every night at your show. And he's like, yeah, I don't listen to you guys.
Yeah, I've been guilty of that. And it's not, you know, it was never anything personal. That's one of the reasons too. Like, always at some point, there's somebody who feels like you have slighted them or you've done something. And so I know there's been times where people are like, oh, you didn't even pay attention to me. I was like, honestly, I was just busy drinking at the bar and maybe talking to someone. And I wasn't talking while you were on stage, but I was just not really paying attention to what was going on stage. And Rudy was always great with that. Rudy would watch everybody, and he was always the one that would be like, this guy needs to be in a show, or this guy should get more time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at that point, I had stopped going to open mics, too. And so Rudy was really the guy that just told me what everybody knew and what everybody's doing. And
I would kinda... did you guys hand Stand Up Soul off to somebody, or did you guys just leave?
Well, you know, Rudy was gone, so it was me with Stand Up Soul. And then I wanted to keep going because, God, I put so much blood, sweat, and tears into that. And
hell yeah,
I built a whole website, and I was willing to hand off the website. But the problem is there was nobody around that really wanted to run it or could. Like, Weiberg was the best choice to hand it up, but Weiberg was now newly married and living an hour and some down south.
Yeah.
And some of the people that I thought I would hand it off to suddenly decided they were going back to the States, which, fair enough, that's what you got to do. Mm-hmm. So then it got handed off. It was to leave it with Marty, but Marty didn't, you could tell Marty didn't really want to take on the responsibility. And so then eventually it just got left to mostly K. Kim. And
K. Kim. That's what Esther Koo told me. You got her in the back.
Yeah.
And I run into her from time to time at the Comedy Store, and she said she was there like a year ago with K. Kim.
Yeah, that's right. And then Rowan started to do stuff on his own. And because actually at the time when I left, I think Rowan had actually left, and then he came back after I left. And Rowan and Chris James kind of started to step up because...
Oh, yeah, Chris James.
I don't think Kay... And I can't speak on his behalf because I haven't really talked to him, but I just don't think Kay was too interested, unless he was making money, to put a lot of time into it. And so Rowan and Chris James kind of started to spearhead stuff again. But now Sane's back after living 2 years in Australia. And Sane is... apparently, when he was in Australia, the whole time, he just did comedy. So now he's really big on, I think... building up the scene again. And
I don't know who that is.
I remember the beatboxer, South Korean kid. He did his military service as a beatboxer.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, he was fresh and very new around when you were still in there. And then he had to go do his military service, so he didn't really have time. But he was always very passionate about doing comedy. And
I do remember him. Yeah. He's still there, huh?
Yeah, and so
I hung out. He was there for my goodbye party. I got drunk and wrestled with him.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. So he was still, he's pretty gung-ho to and do stuff. And like I said, when I went out there with my friend Keener to go out to Asia, he booked us in, he put up a show for us at the South Side and was advertising it. And we were so excited because like Facebook, it looked like it was going to be sold out. But then he it's funny because we were in the Philippines. And we're like, I don't think we're going to go back to South Korea. I have to message Sane and go, sorry, bud, I don't think we're coming back for the show. But that very same day that me and my buddy Keener are talking about this, Sane sent us a message going, sorry, guys, I'm going to have to cancel the show because of coronavirus. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't have to be the guy.
The bad guy.
Yeah. So we were like, don't worry about it. Yeah, no problem.
That's awesome. Well, not awesome, but I'm glad it worked out.
Yeah.
Sort of.
And then, yeah, he's kind of spearheading it right now.
Yeah, that's surprising because I talked to Esther Koo and she was like, no, K. Kim's running it and he did a great job. She seemed to like have a great experience working with K. Kim.
I think that's probably one of the last things K was probably ran.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised because I remember him being like in and out involved, like not 100% involved.
Well, he got married too. That was a big thing.
I didn't know that.
And got a steady job. And so,
really? I thought he was gay. He got married?
Really? You thought he was gay with the amount of time he talked about sleeping with prostitutes on stage?
Yeah. I had dinner with him one night and I still had my doubts.
Yeah. No. He married one of the girls that used to come out to comedy all the time.
Oh, shit. No offense, K. Kim, but I had dinner with you one night and I thought you were a gay dude.
Yeah. Well, he's always had a certain queerness to him.
Sure, but he was always funny as fuck and always coming up with fucking crazy punchlines and premises.
Yeah, no, he was really good.
Surprisingly good, yeah. K. Kim.
Yeah, because if you were to meet him off stage, you might be like, oh, this guy's going to be interesting to watch. And then you get up.
No, luckily I met him first performing. So when he offered to take me to dinner, I said yes, because I was like, this is going to be good. This is going to be a fun conversation. And I did. I had a really good time having dinner with him.
He was
really like super genuinely kind, nice, friendly, wanted to know all about me. He asked me a lot of personal questions. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's why I thought maybe he was just trying to get to know me because he thought I was cute.
He was kind of an ambassador. Whenever we brought people over, towards the last couple of years, Kay always wanted to take them out to dinner and stuff. Or like during the daytime, he'd always take them and show them around and stuff. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, he was great for that.
When's the last year you had like a Kyle Kinane or Matt Bronger out there when you guys were still putting on shows?
We had Kinane. The last time we had him was with when he was with Adam Caton Holland, and that was It could have been 2017, but I think it was 2016. But I mean, I've seen Kinane since cause he came to Winnipeg and stuff. We did shows together and, but yeah, the very last person we brought over was, I don't know. It might've been Glenn Wohl. It was Will Savinch actually. Yeah. It was Will Savinch. That runs the Comedy Cellar there, or does MCs at the Comedy Cellar.
Okay, yeah, I remember you guys were putting on those shows that it was pretty late on, so like after I had been gone for a while.
Yeah, it was at Will Savinch happened after, I believe after Rudy was gone too. It was, you know, the guys that ran Kung Fu Comedy really wanted to start sending some of the comedians that they had flown over to Seoul. And they were so great about it too, because they were like, we'll pay for the big ticket where they fly from, you know, LA to Shanghai. You just got to pay for the ticket from Shanghai to Korea and back.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, sure. And so we got Will Savinch from them, and I think one or two
Glenn
other people.
Wohl?
We didn't get Glenn Wohl from them. Actually, we gave them Glenn Wohl.
Oh, okay.
We had Glenn Wohl twice. And it's funny, too, because I just talked to him the other day. I was going to set up shows for him in Winnipeg, and but then the whole Corona thing happened. So. But he had
moved. You're looking for some acts. I got some friends. I'll send them your way.
Well, no. I don't book anything, really. It's just... Glenn, I went out to Victoria where my sister lives, and Glenn helped me out, got me shows at the comedy club there. And so he messaged me about getting shows here. So I just kind of hooked him up with the producer guys here. But I don't do any of that anymore. I like I said, I don't even really perform as much anymore.
Yeah, man, that's another thing I want, because we're about to start wrapping up here. That was another thing I was going to say. It's kind of overplayed, as soon as the coronavirus is over, I'm gonna hit the stages like I've never hit them before. I hear all the comedians saying it, and I'm not sure what I'm gonna do. I might take this time to reflect and think that, you know, to try to start getting on stage a lot more would take a level of commitment that I think by the time I got to where I want to be, I'm gonna be a different person.
Sure.
So who I am right now, that is kind of like dealing with the reality that the podcast is doing better for me than open mics 3 to 5 nights a week were doing for me. It's like, man, it's not too hard for me to see this as a viable option to lean into and just do this now and not even worry about stand-up, unless through the podcast I start getting booked on more stand-up shows. But I just can't see myself, like, the longer that I'm home, spending time home, that the picturing myself waiting for my turn at an open mic.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that being enjoyable anymore.
That's why, honestly, that's one of the reasons I kind of stopped. Like I came home and there's 30 people at an open mic and I'm like, I can't wait for my 5 minutes. Like I'm not going to, and you know, it's, I'm not trying to be an asshole or feel like I deserve it. I certainly don't, cause I haven't been in the scene, but, you know, it's just, I've already been through it and it's just taken its toll. And now I just don't have the drive to do that, to sit through all those people to get up and try out that 5 minutes. So I just don't really go to a lot of the open mics, and luckily I still get invited to do shows where I get longer sets here, without people seeing me come up with new stuff at open mics. But a lot of that too is, it's really strange, but nobody ever started calling trivia what I would do, like trivia nights, a show, until I came back to Winnipeg. Because in Korea, it was just trivia. They're like, oh, yeah, yeah, come on over. We're doing trivia. And then back here, friends would go, oh, yeah, there's Jeff. Yeah, he does like four shows a week. I'm like, what? No, I don't. And they're like, no, you do like four trivias a week. I'm like, yeah, but those aren't really shows. And they're like, sure they are. Like, you've got a whole presentation. I'm like, yeah, I guess it's a show. And so then a lot of people will go, oh, yeah, he's on stage all the time. But it's not, I'm not doing comedy.
Sure. But do you now that they call it a show, do you find yourself more treating it like a show?
No, nothing's changed. It's just, now I just don't correct them. I used to go, yeah, it's not really a show. Now I just give it up and I go, yeah, yeah, it's a show.
Man, what I think you guys are doing, obviously you're not like performing the whole time. Sometimes you're sitting at the back table drinking beer and talking with your friends. But the shows that I remember at Rocky Mountain, like when I came back, like so I didn't talk to you for a long time because I was in Thailand.
Yeah.
So when I came back, you're already like different. Rudy's different. Everybody's different. Everything's different. And you were doing this trivia thing and you had like this grip on it. Like this was your thing. It wasn't Stand Up Soul. It wasn't a comedy show. It was yours. And you ran it like I run a classroom. Yeah. Like, you know what's going on. You know who's where. You know where we're at on the screen without having to look at it because you've done this 1,000 times. And it was good to see you. I feel like that's your element. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I like order and structure. And
sure. Makes you a good teacher probably.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, well, I think that it would make sense to me. And all the stories you've told me about you being a teacher, and what was your joke? You were teaching them, they wanted to learn about something. You had a joke about your adult students.
Oh,
you wanted to talk about friends or sex or something?
Oh, well, there was one that was from one of the, I think it was Keisha lyrics. She has a line where it's, I want you to eat my asshole like a cupcake. And one of the students asked, like, what does this idiom mean? And I had to explain, like, it's not an idiom. And then I wrote it on the classroom board and we looked over and I had them choose like the nouns and verbs. And then at a certain point, I realized everybody was writing down what I was saying about this. And I had to like instill it in their heads. Like, this is not an expression. You're never going to use this again.
Oh man, Jeff. Well, I'm glad you were here, man. It's been a pleasure. And I hope that, you know, we can do this again. I love having repeat guests just to see the evolution of the people and the podcast and everything. So I thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for
having
me.
Do you have any pet questions?
No, but now I feel like I need to get a pet.
You should get something. I mean, I think it's good for anybody to have a pet if you can take the responsibility if something goes wrong.
This is the ideal time to have a pet because you're home with them all the time.
Dude, my sister just got a puppy because I told her this is a perfect time. All right, so we do have one question from Les Boyd. Remember Les?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, Les Boyd shouts out. He says, how tall are you?
6'6" and a half. Actually, the tallest I was ever measured was 6'7", officially for Manitoba basketball. But I've gotten older. I slouch more. I've gotten fatter. So I'm going to say about 6 feet now.
All right, 6 foot. All right, Les. See, I told you, nobody...
But I'm 6'9" in high heels.
Hey. Well, shit, that was the only serious question, or the only question. Okay, so we do have one segment, so I might as well ask you before I let you go. How do you feel about eating animals? Do you feel like it's ethically wrong to eat animals?
Life feeds on life. The only way to
live... So you have no problem with it.
The only way to live is to feed on life. Even if you're eating vegetables, that's alive. The only way you can... live is to feed on life.
And, okay, I could see that. But how do you feel about the way the animal production system works? Like the fact that we eat animals that were housed or cared for inhumanely?
I think it's terrible. It should be changed, but it doesn't change my eating habits at all.
All right. Hey, I'm on the same page as you. My opinion is this. It's wrong, but it's delicious.
The thing is, I don't look into it. If I was to go onto the net and look into it, maybe my opinions would change, but right now...
So if you had to sign a petition, and the petition said we should treat animals that we eat better, you would sign that?
I would say, yeah.
All right.
We should. But I'm not about to go watch slaughter videos on YouTube.
No, don't do that. Do you think... Here's something that I want to add to. Do you think, like, eating less meat and more vegetables would benefit animals and people in the long run?
I think it would benefit people, but I still think the same amount of production of animals is going to occur.
Unless, I think the same.
Unless there's some sort of proven statistics that does show that if you concentrate more on vegetables, the production will go down.
Yeah, I think we're screwed. I think because some countries rely on the protein of animals for food.
Did you watch Tiger King?
I did.
Well, look at what they do with the Walmart throwouts. Like, there's still that amount of production happening with people not buying it.
Yeah, no, it's fucking sad. But I had this vision of it not being like that one day. So maybe it won't. Maybe it just like one day there just won't be like large production, million chickens stacked on top of each other farming. Maybe one day it just won't be like that.
If we can get this synthesized, you know, fake meat stuff to actually have the texture and the taste of the real thing, then I could see switching over. But
tofu. Did you eat a lot of tofu in Korea?
No, never.
No. Well, it's not so bad once you get used to it, but it's not better than meat.
Yeah, it just doesn't have that kick.
No, man, I've tried. I've tried vegan, I've tried vegetarian, and it's not terrible. It's not awful, but it's not better. It's definitely not better. It's better to eat whatever you feel like eating. But I like the topic, man, and it's always fun to see where it takes us. But I kind of asked you late in the episode, but okay. You know, whatever. We talked about a lot of stuff, and it's always fun every time I do this. So thank you again. Thank you, everybody that's listening.
Thanks for having
Jeff,
me.
Jeff, do you have any social media or anything people could follow what you're doing and kind of follow you online?
Right now, it's not really a lot. It's only for people in Winnipeg, so I don't think it.
Okay. So if you're in Winnipeg, look up Jeff Sinclair. Where would you normally put on shows? And how about any venues you want to promote?
Okay. Well, the Goodwill, which is one of my favorite places. The Wee Johnny's Comedy Night. There's comedy there 5 nights a week. There's The Handsome Daughter, which I myself don't really perform at, but it's a really good comedy hub. There's the local club, The Rumors, that people do at. And I think that's... And then, of course, I do trivia at A Little Pizza Heaven. I also do trivia at this place called Underdogs, and also at another place called Garbanzo sometimes.
Well, since you're working at a lot of different venues, have you gotten any tentative reopen dates?
No, but actually Manitoba's doing quite well right now. We've only got 103 active cases. So we're really going down. We were at 200 and some, but we're down to 103. And if the next week continues, they're thinking the end of April, there can be soft opens for some places. And,
oh, wow. Okay.
But we're not going to, I mean, it's probably not going to be till June, till things are open, but I still don't think they're going to be heavily attended because people are going to be pretty guarded still.
And what about you? And this is what I'll wrap up on. Where do you think it's going to be back to normal? When do you think? Just throw a number out there. When will we be back to normal? If you had to put all your money on it.
End of August.
End of August. Okay, I'm end of the year. My money's on. They're just shutting down 2020. We restart 2021.
And I'm speaking for Canada.
Okay, right.
Yeah. Like, my brother actually works with the guys in the CDC. And so his initial analysis when he's like, you know, nothing's going to change. At first he was saying July, but now he's going end of August if everything goes well.
That's great. I'll take it. Yeah. As a teacher, man, let me, I can handle till August and then we can start over. Cause it's a nice like starting point as a teacher, August. All right, man. Well, I got nothing else. We plug the podcast all the time. You can find it on Anchor, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play Music, Google Podcasts. Some of the episodes are on YouTube. I want to put them all on there, but it takes a lot of memory on my computer and time to edit. Also, you can find the podcast on Instagram at Pet Peeves Podcast, on Twitter at Pet Peeves Pod. You can find me, Albert Escobedo, at Albert Escobedo on Instagram and at Albert M. Escobedo on Twitter. What else? You can find my stand-up comedy special on YouTube. Don't judge me. Go check that out. And check out the affiliate links at the bottom or in the description or wherever it is. And thank you guys for listening. Take care of each other. Take care of yourselves. Practice social distancing. Let's all get through this. Once again, thank you, Jeff, for being here.
Thanks for having me.
See you guys next episode.